Mike and I are both world-class music lords. We're gatekeepers to several communities of music taste.
Yes.
But we don't pay attention in class. So when all the other metalheads were memorizing Judas Priest albums, I was listening to Scatterbrain. So the point is that we have a lot of holes in our understanding of the thing that we pretend is our bread and butter. Me more than Mike, I'm going to bet. We'll get to that someday. I think that I'm worse than you, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think you studied better than I did. But we're here to fill those holes, all holes filled. Each episode, we're going to pick something personal, something we've always wanted to check out or at least find intriguing. And then we'll each pick something more general that like a normal walking around asshole of our age bracket, our marketing demographic, or our graduating class would expect us to have heard. And that could be anything from Steve Miller to that Ramallah song from last year. Did you hear that?
The ICP sounding one? Yeah.
It just has to be defensible. Like, I think the net can be real wide, but it should, and we're taking suggestions. We have a good list, but if you're listening to this, you're a friend of the show. We don't have that many friends. So you're a friend of the show if you're even hearing this. So send us your picks for things that you think are, you know, influential or seminal or notable or just very funny and everybody knows it. That works too. You know, I don't care. That's a hole that should be filled as well. But that's all holes filled. And this episode, I'm just going to say it up front. I think this episode is called The Singer Fucking Kills It For Me. But we made a few choices. I think we're always probably going to go general first because that seems like fun.
Yeah.
But we'll let you go first, Mike. What was your general choice?
Okay. My general choice was a album that I think mostly everybody on earth heard before me. It's called Doolittle. It's by the Pixies. Which, yeah, I believe is a band most people know. Doolittle, I'm just going to read from the Wikipedia, just so the other person that never listened to the Pixies out there,
yeah, can that's be with me. Actually, yeah, it's me.
Okay, cool.
I'm perfect with you. I didn't listen to
that. It's the second studio album by the Pixies. It was released April 1989 on 4AD. The album's offbeat and dark subject material, featuring references to surrealism, biblical violence, torture, and death, contrasts with the clean production sound achieved by the newly hired producer Gil Norton. Doolittle was the Pixies' first international release with Elektra Records. Doolittle has continued to sell consistently well in the years since its release, and in 1995 it went certified gold, which took 6 years to hit that mark, even though it's this huge influential record that everybody cites. So this was my general pick, because the way I'm just kind of just defining these in my head, as personal is more something that I probably should have listened to, and it could have like shaped my direction or something, or you know, just something that was personal to me, like maybe my friends listened to it and I didn't. But general for me is just something that I could have probably went my whole entire life without ever listening to this Pixies album.
Yeah.
And I would have been fine.
Yeah.
But I would hear the Pixies usually in movies, like on a movie soundtrack.
Fight Club.
Yeah.
We mostly hear them in Fight Club. The times we watch Fight Club over and over.
Yes, but they have to have some small record for songs and movies, man, because they have a lot.
Yeah,
and so I'd always hear a song, like usually the "Where Is My Mind" song. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, "That's a fucking cool song. Who does that?" And I'd look it up, and it would be the Pixies. And I'd be like, "Yeah, maybe I should listen to that record someday." And never did. And yeah. So then we're approached with this all holes filled. So I figure this is a perfect time to finally listen to the Pixies' Doolittle, their defining album.
I think it would be interesting to know, what did you expect it to sound like before you listened?
I kind of, you know, I know the "Where Is My Mind" song. I knew, yeah, "This Monkey's Gone." I knew that. And so I kind of knew that. I also always got the Pixies mixed up with the Sugar Cubes, another band I've never listened to. So
wow.
I'm always like, is the Sugar Cubes the one Bjork's in, or is it the Pixies? Like,
she was in both. She played bass in the Breeders and in Pixies.
Yeah. And I was like, is that the one with Bob Mould? Is it the one with Frank Black? Like, I knew, you know, I always got them mixed up.
Yeah.
So I knew it was like some kind of alternative rock that was probably kind of poppy and probably ahead of its time. So that's, mm-hmm, kind of what I was going into. And I've realized I heard most of these songs before just in, like, watching movies over the time. And I don't think I can say anything about this album that probably hasn't been said, but you know, it's very good. It's a very, very good album.
Yeah.
It's like, it's pretty amazing, honestly. Like, it's not like it doesn't sound cohesive, but it definitely sounds like they got some really, really talented people in a room and had them write like 50 songs and put their 15 best on this, because mm-hmm. it's like, you know, it's not like they run through genres track by track, but there's definitely like, they cover a lot of bases in this and still stick to their sound. But, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but basically like they have a very unique, they take a lot of unique direction, I guess I would say, where it's just like, I guess I never realized all these songs were the Pixies because they all have like a different sound to them. So it kind of makes sense. But you know, after you listen to it, like I listened to this record like 4 or 5 times and I was like, yeah, you know, I can see like what glues all these songs together now, but it's really good. It's like really good. I think they call themselves even pop, but I hate to use that word because, you know, most people relate pop to, you know, like Beyonce or something like that. But it is like, you know, kind of like poppy rock, but not what you would imagine when you said poppy rock. But I don't even know why I need to describe this to anybody, because apparently me and Scott are the only people who've never heard this. But
it's our job to talk out loud about this. Yes. We have to.
So, you know, for the people that, you know, were wondering if, oh, maybe they're going to hate the Pixies. I don't hate it. I think this is great. I think this is a record that I could fully not be embarrassed about just picking up now in my late, late age, because I'm, you know, I'm not known to listen to this music that often. So I think I could pull it off. Like Sawyer from Kissing Contest discovered Morrissey at the age of 35. And, you know, that's like a bad look. But I think I could dumb myself down enough where I could be like, I just never knew, man. I never knew that Pixies record was really good.
Yeah. Well, that's what this whole show, I mean, that's what we're doing. It's fine. That's the stance we're supposed to take. I want us to find new favorites. Like I'm not here to, I think it's stupid when, like, there's other podcasts that do that where they just clown on things. We actually found one. You pointed one out the other day that, someone famous's son,
They do a
podcast where they take the devil's advocate stance on everything, and they just trash it as sort of a joke. That's been done. I'm here to love. I'm here to like enjoy. I'm here to like find things that I think are great and tear things down when they're not. I fucking hate the Pixies.
Did you? No.
I don't like the Pixies because of what you said, that it sounds so different.
Yeah.
And they do sound cohesive because they have, you know, they're great. They're great musicians. And they're great, or whoever produces them or whatever gets a real like saturation. You know, it's real dense and real, like it almost sounds like cellos instead of guitars and stuff like that. It's cool. And Frank Black, I actually like Frank Black's screaming. You know, he's a really quality screamer, which sounds like a gag or whatever. But if you listen to, you know, extreme music, it's not. Some people suck at screaming. And, you know, he's good at that. And I like when they sing together and stuff. But it sounds like 9 different bands to me.
Yeah.
And I just never... When I was younger, I could roll with that. And as I got older, I wanted just everything to be kind of Amon Amarth, where every album, where I just get 9 tracks of hits that sound like the same.
But I think that's definitely why people love this record so much, because that never works. That approach to an album, I don't think ever works. So
it is bold. It's ballsy that they have songs like Monkey Gone to Heaven or whatever that are just way different than the other ones.
Yeah.
That are like soft and ethereal. That's odd. Even I think at the time it was pretty odd. And you know, that's how they became influential to almost everything that came out, where it was quiet and loud. That was an entire decade was like, hey, isn't it really crazy that this part is really quiet and this part is really loud?
That's the part I can't really put together, because I wasn't really, you know, the Pixies were definitely not on my radar in 1989.
Yeah.
So, I
confuse them with someone else too, and I'm forgetting who it is. There's another P band. It's not the Pogues, but it's Posies.
Oh, the Posies. Yeah.
So to me, like I just, if I didn't know what it was and it sounded like something else, I lumped it all in, and I just thought this was any other indie band. And then my ska metal band tried to get me to cover that Monkey Gone to Heaven song.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're 17, anything about monkeys is like that's funny. It's like it could be cheese or monkeys, and if you're a dork. at that age, you just think that that's hilarious and that there's like a joke to it. I don't know if there is or not. I have no idea what those lyrics are about, but that was the sales pitch to me, is like, it's so funny that it's a song about monkeys.
Yeah. That was actually one of my notes, is because I've heard that song, because I think this was a single, or maybe even been the lead single off of this record. Yeah. And So I always heard that song and I always assumed I was getting the lyric wrong and they were saying something really profound beside this monkey's gone to heaven. No. But that's exactly what they're saying. So
also, I knew the song title Wave of Mutilation since I was pretty young and I was expecting something a little more dead ass than what I think we got.
Yeah. Out of yeah.
It's fine. It's all right. But there's stuff on this album. Like there's a song called Dead and there's a song called Mr. Greaves and they're silly. And I don't really like silly rock, you know, like I think that they're doing something. I'm not taking anything away from them. This is your jam. That's fine. I get that they're, you know, creative and seminal and awesome. And I actually like the Frank Black put out a solo album with that Los Angeles song and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That stuff's it's pretty cool. Like he's really, you know, he's the real deal. So I'm not upset about him and his choices, but I'm not going to listen to silly songs. You can't put out a silly song and get me to listen to it.
The only other stuff I have to say about this is definitely something I'll listen to. I'll probably even explore their other records. And again, they're a band. You could tell me they had one record. They had 15 records. I wouldn't know. I thought it was on the lower side. I think it is. I think they only have 3 or 4 or something.
Because they got back together, and I have no idea if they're even still making records now. They could be like one of those bands that has 9 records since 2012. You know, like some of these reunion bands start like churning out records, and they shouldn't. So would you have liked this if you had heard it when you were 16?
I definitely would have not liked this when I heard it when I was 16. If I heard this when I was like 22 or 23, probably like 23, 24, around that age when I could. Mm-hmm. I think like once we were in a band and that was like my first band. So I think I could appreciate music a little differently after being in a band. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, post band, I think I would have liked this. But 16, definitely too young. I would have just, it just would have sounded like dumb noise to me.
I'm with you. I don't think I could have, because I was only sort of on the page with Nirvana. I'm not comparing them. Nirvana's going to come up a couple times, but I was sort of on the page with that kind of, like, if it's poppy and heavy, I wasn't really there for that.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of getting at. Like, I don't know. I usually, when I listen to records like this or just anything, I try and put the puzzle pieces together, and I don't know what people were listening previously to the Pixies. Like, what were they listening to? And then they heard the Pixies and they're like, yeah, that's my jam. Like, I just can't connect the dots on that.
The two kids or kids at my school that were like 2 years older than me and wore army jackets had a Nine Inch Nails logo and a 7 Seconds logo on their jackets. So that's, I assume that mostly, you know, what people were listening to in the couple years prior to me forming into a human being. Okay. So my general pick. Oh, you're opening a can. You know what I'm drinking right now? Iron Brew. I have an imported 4-pack of Iron Brew soda. Have you ever had this?
I think it's pronounced like Aaron Brew or something like that. But yeah,
maybe Earn Brew. It's not great. It actually kind of tastes like when like a better soda is left out too long.
I thought it tastes like orange soda on steroids.
It's not really orange. I mean, maybe like bubblegum.
It's like
soda.
Citrusy. And maybe I had like a special one. I thought it's like citrusy, right?
This one, it should be. It's in an orange can.
Yeah.
I'm smelling it. It smells like bubblegum. It just smells like sweet. You know, it's like, and it's just sugar sweet. So, you know, it's not there. It's not really, there's no zip. So my general pick this episode was an album called Crooked Rain by Pavement. And apparently this is 1994, and this was like their, you know, big rock album. Like they put out Slanted and Enchanted, and that was more like lo-fi indie, probably what I was expecting. And this was like their, you know, they went for it. They got a better drummer and they went for it. And this was their big rock album. And it's hugely influential, apparently. I don't know who, but it's hugely influential. So I was expecting, I knew about this band, and I think I'd heard Sebado, which is a band that came after with some of the same, at least the same main guy, I think. But I didn't really have a distinct shape for this. I just thought it was going to be bullshit. I just thought it was going to be crappy production, out of tune, like jangly, you know, like crap guitars. Like, you know how Flight of the Conchords all play cheap Russian instruments and stuff, and it kind of sounds shitty, but and they make it work. I was just expecting all broken instruments. And I
you previously heard the haircut song though, right?
I don't know. But it's no, but the intro song on this, I don't know what the name of it was.
It is Silence Kid.
Silence Kid. I've heard that, and I don't know how or where. Maybe it's in a movie or something like that. But I didn't know the Cut Your Hair song, and that's, apparently that's a hit.
Yeah, it's a hit.
No, none of this was really on my radar. I knew beyond a shadow of doubt it was going to have that weak, slack ass bullshit vocals. I knew it was going to have those, like, please don't look at me, like kidding around, low attention, low energy, low T. Literally nothing kills an album for me like a male singer that is weak. You don't have to be great, but you have to have some, some oomph. You got to be trying. I would put it at 100% failure rate. You have to be trying. If you get up to the microphone, you should be trying to sing like Freddie Mercury. Whether you can do it or not, that should be your goal. Jesus Christ. So it wasn't any of those things, really. Have you listened to this before?
No, I was gonna say this is like a record that I've never listened to because I've had no interest in listening to it. Yeah. And I do have I have several friends that, they love this album, and I have no interest. I've heard the Cut Your Hair song.
Yeah.
And when you put all these songs together, that's the one that they're gonna make the video for. Like, that's the one the A&R hears and goes, that's the video. Mm-hmm. And it shows, because that's the most put together accessible song on here. So I was expecting 12 songs that sounded like that, and that's not true.
I'm kind of gonna eat my words on this one, because this isn't even bad. Like, I don't think this album is bad, because it's got all the things I said. It's got like crappy guitars and it's got crappy vocals, but it's like they're doing the most they can possibly do with it. Like, they actually are trying to make Bohemian Rhapsody or something like that with all this bullshit, like they're trying to make an arena rock album. And so I was 100% right that it had those vocals. I was 100% right that it had like loose, clangy, like underproduced guitars. But, I think, here's what I think happened. Dave Grohl. You know who Dave Grohl is?
He's the president of rock music.
He's the president of rock music. But Dave Grohl is the reason that anyone gives a flying fuck about Nirvana.
What do you mean? How is that possible?
Nobody would ever have listened to Smells Like Teen Spirit if it didn't have that sick beat. It was just a regular punk song. They broke out with Smells Like Teen Spirit, and the only reason you care about Smells Like Teen Spirit is because it was so funky. Like, that beat, it was every drummer I knew could play that beat a week later, and they were trying to put it under every heavy song that they could imagine. All kinds of stuff that came out in the wake of that was basically just drummers trying to figure out how they could do like some syncopated, funky stuff under heavy rock. That was all of a couple years. That's Dave Grohl. There would be no Nirvana t-shirts at Target right now if it wasn't for Dave Grohl. Whatever he's done since then.
And that's how he became the president of rock music.
That's why he's the president. He's the president of rock for playing guitar. So I don't vouch for that. But you put him behind the drums, he's at least 80%. But that's what this album has. This album has like a good drummer. So even when they're just doing jangly bullshit, the drummer's still going bananas. And he's good. And there's like a lot of stuff on this album that I would be furious about, that I would be like, super like sweating agitated because it's so meandering and stupid. This drummer is still, he's still kicking it. He's like, even on some of the dumb songs, he's still flying. I'm like, all right. And even like to prove my point, there's this really incongruous song. It doesn't fit on the album. I don't know if you got this far, but there's a song that's in 5/4, and I think it has the word five in the title. That's like a little 5/4
unity.
Yeah. 5/4 unity
equals unity. Yeah.
There's like Take Five. There's a Jethro Tull song. There's a few songs out there that are in 5/4, but it shows that your drummer can keep a weird beat. Did you like it at all?
I'll get into mine after you're done, so I don't want to spoil it yet.
Well, it's like, it's not all good. Like, this isn't all good. It's not all, like, there's a lot of stuff on here that reminds me that I really hate the 90s. I hate jokes. I hate novelty. I hate, like, smart ass. I hate, like, if the lyrics are, I know that you're trying to be a little clever and you said this word a little clearly so I can get to it. That's like Cut Your Hair. Find me on Twitter and do your worst, but Cut Your Hair is basically Buddy Holly by Weezer. It's like the same genre. It's the same clever 1992 shit, and that can eat my ass. I hate that. I hate that. All of that. And there's other joking around this album, so there's a lot to answer for. Also, there's songs in this album where they try and get a little heavy. That's kind of not, that doesn't really, if you actually listen to, listen, guys. I don't want to be a swinging dick or nothing, but we listen to some really heavy music at All Holes Filled, and you're not hitting that. It just sounds kind of cute. But this album was dense. It has atmosphere. It has cool buildups. The production is interesting. And I think the energy was there. Like, I think the singer and all the other people in this were trying to land, to hit their mark. And I think they kind of did. So what did you think, Mike?
So would you have listened to this when you're 16? I'm going to assume no.
Not even remotely. In my 20s. So, and this is the shitty revelation. Come at me about this if you think you got what it takes. But there's a song called You Faded by Chavez that I think is just a heavier version of this. And I love that song. That's one of my favorite songs. Same kind of weak, crappy vocals, you know, same like kind of weirdly produced guitars, but it's kind of like someone made an epic metal song out of that genre.
So for me, I guess I'll start off by saying that I'm a person who hates getting old. I've hated getting old since I was 25. I think there's no positives to getting old.
Yeah, me too.
The one big positive, I think this is the only positive you have to look for. Young people out there, this is the only positive you have to look forward to for getting old, is that one day you'll be able to like buy everyday things and not have to check your bank account. And that's like, that's like the number one great thing about being old is like, that happens someday for you. But the other thing that happens that I realized by listening to records like this and just being old in general is that once you get old, you're a lot less like upset about things and like agitated by stuff. So I can listen to a record like this and just go, this is a fine record. This is just a fine record. I still don't understand what separated this record from anything else going on in the mid-90s to make it this influential thing. Like, I don't know, like, you can play 1,000 records that all kind of sounded like this, and I couldn't pick this one out for being the best one.
If you had cherry-picked, like, a really sweet moment from this, you'd probably get me. It's kind of the same with the Pixies. Yeah. If you had cherry-picked, like, the Pixies do a song called Valoria. I think it's Valoria. And that's the one where there's just, like, a 3-second video segment that they stretched out.
Yeah.
80s style, you know, when they couldn't smooth between frames. I like that song. So if you showed me that song, I'd be like, oh, I'm probably going to dig this band. And this is the same way. Like, if you had just played me a few key moments where they kind of really build up and get a little heavy, you could almost convince me that this band was something special. I don't know. Like I said at the beginning, I don't know who this influenced. I don't know what came out of this. I like legitimately, not being a smartass, I don't know what this is a big deal album. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure what it is that tumbled out of this.
Yeah, I don't know. I will, like Scott said, most of what I would have to say, except a lot more eloquently and with technical terms too. But I will.
Hey, I got lost.
It's okay. It's your album. But there's just like a lot of noodly moments on this where if I was a younger boy, I would definitely be agitated by them. The third track, I think, Stop Breathing, just has like a very like ISIS, not the terrorist group of the band. ISIS type of like
build. But also the terrorist group.
Yeah, also the terrorist group. Into like the generic heavy parts that all those like Neurosis worshipping bands do. Yeah. But you know, this just builds into more of this music. it's just like, oh, cool. Like, and it's just kind of sounds like fucking band practice. Like, you're just like, I've been to band practice too. I know what doing that sounds like. It's just like stuff like that. I will say the one thing that Scott said that I disagree with is I think I guess the guitars are still underproduced, but I think the production is what sets this record apart from probably its peers. Even through shitty earbuds and listening through Spotify, which is not the best service for audiophiles, which is that Neil Young service, whatever the fuck that was called.
Pango?
Pango. Or
Pangolin?
Oh, no. Poco. It was Poco. Yeah. I think like the production for this style of music is fucking perfect. Mm-hmm. Sounds like these guys are right in your bedroom with you. Even the last track, which I hope was probably just a bonus track that you had to like fast forward a lot.
It was like 9 songs.
Yeah, I hope that was just like a bonus, like a hidden track on the CD. But that CD, like that song, if like you listen close, it even has like the demo tape hiss to it. It's like real underground shit, man. But yeah, I thought the production on this was really good. I don't understand what all my friends see in this record above other records. Mm-hmm. I can't put that together. I definitely would not listen to this when I was 16. But it is a fine record, though. I didn't hate listening to it.
Yeah, that's what I came out of this. Is the stuff that would have made me really mad didn't make me as mad. And one thing that I will caution you, if you're like me and you've never heard this album, there's 2 versions on Spotify and one's a double album.
Yeah.
Watch your fucking mouse. Watch your click. Don't click on the double album, because that last track seems to go on forever as it is. Imagine if it did. Imagine if it did just keep going on forever.
Okay, so my personal one is a record by the group Lifetime called Jersey's Best Dancers. This came out in 1997. The album was it was on Rock Sounds, the 51 most essential. It was number 40 on Rock Sounds, 51 most essential pop punk albums of all time. Mm-hmm. BuzzFeed included the album at number 8 on their 36 pop punk albums you need to hear before you fucking die list. Yeah, before you fucking die. BuzzFeed, super edgy. Eddie Capeta of Noisy noted the album's influence on future pop punk bands such as Paul Out Boy, Panic at the Disco, and Taking Back Sunday. So, this came out in 1997, like I said. I think if you are like a Lifetime super fan, you're listening to this right now, and you're probably wondering why I'm not doing Hello Bastards, because that was like, you know, their big breakthrough album. But right. but this is the one that's like more memorable in my personal life of people. Like, people listen to Lifetime for that first one, but everybody listened to Lifetime when this one came out. Like, I was definitely the odd man out not listening to Lifetime by the time this one came out.
This is the one that I think of. This is for sure, because I don't know, maybe it's the funny album title, but this is the one that my mind would go to.
Yeah, and they broke up by the time this was released. But either way, this is also their swan song. I mean, we've noted many times already on this podcast that we're both hard men. But yeah. I do like, it's not like this, I'm just completely off put by this style of like poppy punk hardcore. Like, I used to listen to a lot of bands that sounded like this, but I just could never get into Lifetime. I didn't know what it was. I mean, I know now it's the way the dude sings, but like, but you know, I listened to like a lot of stupid shit back then, and I just never understood why this was the band that got all the accolades for playing like melodic hardcore. But
yeah,
and also the band after they broke up and basically formed the same band again with a different singer called Kid Dynamite. That record is probably in like my top 10 or top 20 like hardcore records of all time. So. It's not even like I hate the band members, but I mean,
is there a cave-in band that formed with almost the same kind of name?
Oh, I don't know.
I feel like, so this is one of my problems. Is Kid Dynamite was out.
But there was Dynamite Kid for a while. I don't know if people if cave-in were in it. Yeah,
I don't know. But there was an album that had cave-in dudes, and I was hoping that they had gone back to sounding like cave-in. So I was very confused, and that soured me on whatever Kid Dynamite is actually for life. I'll never go back to it.
But yeah, I mean, listening to this now, it hasn't really changed. Like, I can understand now what people liked about this. I still don't like it. It's mostly now for me the singer, and from age, this just seems like real boring now. Like, I could tell, you know, they did influence a lot of bands with this sound. You could definitely tell, but it sounds so basic now compared to other bands that do this now. And even it sounds completely basic compared to Kid Dynamite, which was like a few years later. And, you know, I don't know, like, I just don't know why you would still listen to this record in 1997 unless it was nostalgia. I will say the one song I always liked about them was a theme song for a New Brunswick basement show. That was the lone song I liked, and I could never figure out why that was the only song I liked. But even compared to the rest of the stuff on this album, that just seems like that song seems like a lot more nuanced and advanced. Like, that was probably the last song they wrote. Mm-hmm. And it seems like if they kept on, like if they did another album, it would have probably sounded more like that song. And then I would have probably liked them. So I think it's their fault I don't like them, because they broke up too soon. But, you know, outside of that, you know, like I said, I'm old. I can say this is a fine album. It's nothing I'm ever going to go back to listening to. It's not for me anymore. I'm too old. And I didn't really check the lyrics, but I'm sure there's a lot of like, you know, sappy lyrics about ladies and stuff.
It's real weird. I always picture, like, when it's sort of like post-hardcore or something like that, I think all the lyrics are about looking back.
Yeah.
Like, they're all about, like, like you're a 22-year-old or to 25-year-old writing these lyrics, but the song is about, you know, looking back to the old days as though you're a 60-year-old man.
That is what a lot of this, like, what a lot of adult pop punk became, which is, like, dudes who are, like, 27 talking about, like, sharing their memories, sitting around the campfire and shit like that. It's just like, Jesus Christ, man, you don't want to be old. It sucks. And that's just what they're singing about.
Don't rush it.
Don't rush it. But, I mean, it's like listening. I listened to it again today before we started recording to see if I could get any more out of it. And it did seem like this was 1997, and this is, it's really well played, I think. This is, for what it is, it's really well. I just think it's kind of basic compared to the future 20 more years of music that came after this. But, you know, it seems kind of basic compared to that. But no, this is really well played. They even have like a harder song that was more like Kid Dynamite called Bringing It Backwards. That's the song I love.
What? Well, I assume that that's a Judge joke and that the breakdown was a Judge breakdown, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. So it's like a parody song almost, but it's probably their second best song on this record. So, you know, I don't know. And like, I think that might have been the catch, is that they could play their instruments and people could overlook how silly this man sounds. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know what appealed to Lifetime people that like them so much. So I'm going to assume the singer was last on everybody's list, but I could be wrong. Maybe people love this guy's voice. What do you think of the vocals on this?
They ruined it. I'll never listen to this album again, because I will never listen to that man sing another note as long as I live, if I don't have to. You know, unless you tell me that he blew his nose for another album and it changed. I mean, I didn't expect this at all. I didn't expect this to be that badly sung and to have like the Fat Wreck beat like on every fucking song. I thought this was going to be like Silent Majority or something. I don't know what I was expecting, but I just was expecting, to me, you tell me that something is kind of like, it's not hardcore, but hardcore kids like it. I expect post-hardcore.
Yeah.
I expect 90s post-hardcore. I expect Quicksand or something like that. And, I didn't see this coming. I put press play on this. I skipped a couple other songs. Like, oh my God, they just keep playing that beat. They just keep doing this fast thing. And that's cool. Like, I know that that's fine. I'm not saying you can't listen to fast music or whatever, but I just didn't, I couldn't sink my teeth into it. It was too much too soon. I played this. I was like, this is what this shit sounds like. But, I skipped around a little bit, and there's definitely something going on. You know, they're definitely, like you said, they're really good at their instruments. The production is sweet. It's like, you know, it's nice and heavy. The guitars, it's like they used metal guitars to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're really heavy, and you could tell that that's where, I guess, the hardcore influence comes from. Like, they had the same gear as a band before them on the set or something. So they just got used to playing, you know, through heavy gain. But there's these little transitions in the song. You're listening to it. You know, if you're into music, like, press play on a couple of these songs and let them go, because there's parts where they change between parts and it's beautiful. Just for a second. Just every now and then for one song. Like, you could tell that somebody in the band has a little bit of theory or a little bit of songwriting acumen and did it well. Just now and then. Not the whole thing. The whole thing doesn't really do much for me, but once in a while they hit this part. You're like, oh wow, that was, I wish that you could stretch that part out for most of this album instead of the beat that you're actually playing all the time. But yeah, I mean, like, this, I'm sorry to my one of my best friends in the world is always trying to get me to listen to Lagwagon and Propagandhi. It's not gonna happen. I tried. I don't like listening to that Fat Wreck shit. I don't like that hearing that beat. That's like, you need to do that once in a while on the album. You can't have the whole album be that beat for me. It's not gonna land. So this just, I listen to this and it just sounds like all that other booger punk. This just sounds like Boogers and Skate Shoes and Warped Tour. And I know it's not.
Yeah.
I'm a little let down. This is maybe the worst letdown of the episode.
you mentioned Silent Majority, and I think that's a reason why I can never define why I didn't like this record, because back then I just I loved Silent Majority, but I always lumped them in with Silent Majority because my scope of music was so tiny. I was like, well, you know, they both kind of don't scream, and you know, they're kind of like more melodic, so they're kind of the same thing, but they're not. They're totally not the same band at all. And yeah, I mean, now I can hear it and be like, oh, this is just fucking pop punk. That's probably why I didn't like it. But yeah, I know there's a lot of Lifetime lovers out there, so maybe you could defend your band. I know the singer, I don't think they broke up, and I think they might have been like one of the last holdouts. Like, I think they just started doing reunion shows.
Yeah.
And I know the singer has, like, he just released a demo with a bunch of other, you know, big time hardcore guys, and it's just like completely not notable. It's like total, like, we're just old guys. We're going to play some music because we just want to have fun.
There's a lot of those bands out right now. Yeah, there's like several super groups of old men. Yeah.
But it's like the evolution, like, after we got too old to go to shows, like, the evolution of hardcore music got so fucked up because they stopped headlining new bands. Like, it's all just like the same bands that were playing shows when we were 14 are still headlining shows. And so now kids don't understand that these guys are old and just want to play music to have fun and don't want to be serious.
Yeah.
And they're wondering why all this music is bad. And it's like, because the dude's 45, man. Like, he's a fucking, he doesn't have his finger on the pulse.
Yeah, he had to go back to work.
Yeah, he had to go back to work, man. So, yeah, I mean, outside of nostalgia, I don't see anybody picking up Lifetime Jersey's Best Dancers for the first time. Unless you are super into pop punk and you're like a teen kid and you want to hear where it all started. But I definitely did not like this at 16 and I don't like it now.
Oh, yeah. Like, dude, if you actually are someone who likes NOFX and Lagwagon, listen to this.
Yeah, for sure.
This is like the Masterpiece Theater version of.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
All right. So my this is it. This is where we're going to lose listeners.
Yes.
And maybe subscriptions. And maybe even maybe we'll lose our subscription to SoundCloud. They'll just dox us and get us kicked off. Yeah, we're going to, like, this is Cro-Mags' Age of Quarrel. Surprise, surprise, I never listened to the Cro-Mags, not even once. And this is going to be a theme. We'll talk about other bands that I should have at least heard by now. And I haven't. Age of Quarrel, I never listened. And you know, they were always in magazines when I was a kid, too. Like, because I listened, you know, I used to read, like, Rip and Metal Maniacs.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, crossover metal at that point or something. And I liked crossover metal. Like, I actually liked, you know, the Crumb Suckers and DRI and all that. I don't know how I missed Cro-Mags. They're definitely a little bit more state of the art than some of the stuff that I did like, but I just skipped it. So in 1986, this is 86, which is pretty cool. I heard recently that this, like, a lot of the stuff even predates the music predates that quite a bit, which is, I guess that's impressive. I don't know.
It is.
I guess it's impressive. Yeah. So, like, this is not the album I thought of first that I thought I was listening to. I was expecting Best Wishes. They actually made it to MTV with this album, which is a surprise. But I guess, well, you know, 86 MTV, I guess they were still taking whatever they could get. But yeah, We Gotta Know actually had a video on MTV. That's a surprise. And according to every person I've ever met, this is the number one album of all time.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, the number one hardcore album. It's the rain and blood of hardcore. Unquestionable. And so when I was expecting it to be way crazy, way epic, this is an album that's really beloved by people that like really heavy stuff, but also the number one album of people who like trashy nude mosh pit shit punk. You know what I mean? So I was pretty leery. I don't think we're all on the same page of what constitutes legendary right at the get-go. But it, like, if I'm honest, Mike, if I'm honest... I think I was expecting to hear Biohazard.
I'll get into that when I talk. So yeah.
I was expecting to hear like an 80s version of, you know, Punishment, like where it's kind of epic, you know, it's kind of like heavy, you know, dark, not that, you know, not the Punishment back, but it's like widescreen, you know, that's like pretty widescreen hardcore. And there's a red nuclear explosion in the cover. Like, I thought this was going to be serious. I thought this was going to be a serious album. I thought it was just going to be just the future of music and everything. I was expecting just a hot, scouring wind of destruction, and I didn't get that. I didn't get that at all. This is like, there's a few doomy songs in this album, but this is, it's none of the things I was looking for. And a lot of this album sounds silly. It's silly. It's like Jello Biafra, you know, like the vote. Like, do you know a lot about John Joseph? Like, are you one of the people that knows about him? And like,
oh yeah, I listened to his audiobook.
I didn't know. You know, I thought that he was, I wasn't sure if people liked or like followed or knew about, I was thinking more Rick to Life. Like he had a problem. Like he was HR from Bad Brains. Like he had a problem and people were kind of like keeping tabs on him because he was homeless sometimes and scary. So I started watching his YouTube kind of recently and obviously he's not that. He's more like a funny, like witty philosopher dude or something like that. He sounds like Lori Petty to me. He sounds and he looks like Lori Petty who played Tank Girl. Like that's what I think. I'm looking like an old man version of Lori Petty. And I don't mind him. I don't have a problem with him or anything like that. I just didn't follow him. And I didn't know that this wasn't that like these vocals were in store for me. And this.
I think Harley was the crazy man in the group. And John is definitely, I think, a one of a kind type of guy. I got a good story. I've probably shared with anybody who's listening to this podcast anyways, but yeah. I'll share it a little later.
All right. So, you know, the strong parts of this album are like a lot of it's fast. It's a lot of, you know, upbeat, fast hardcore with a couple of breakdowns here and there. And, you know, this is what I think of as like quote unquote old hardcore to me. Like if I see an album where there's a cartoon drawing of a skinhead and a punk getting along in the pit or not getting along or like not really not getting along, I just think it's 11 tracks of, you know, survival on the streets. Like that's one. So that's my misconception, I guess. But, so there's like three pretty well-known kind of doomy songs in this, like kind of slower, heavier songs. And that's what made me think that this, like, that was the one that led to Best Wishes. And, Best Wishes is when I guess Harley took over. I don't know the whole story, but, even that album, I skipped over there and I was like, was this what I was looking for? Is this the scary, like super, like epic heavy album? Not really, because in the '80s, metal meant something else. Like most, yeah. I forget that they called Def Leppard a metal band. They called Wasp a metal band. You know, like that was actually metal. It wasn't Deicide and Carcass. Those bands weren't out yet. Slayer was out. Merciful Fate was out, but they weren't what people were referring to. They were talking maybe like Judas Priest or like, oh, right. I get it. Like, this is what would happen if Raven was your, like, you know, your Rain and Blood. Like that's as hard as it got. So. This album kind of suffered for not being even remotely what I expected. And I did what I would never normally do. I actually just set it aside, gave it a rest. It's like, I came into this wrong. I'm going to give it a couple days. And I came back and that kind of worked. I kind of warmed up to it. You got to take a breather and, you know, come at it a different way, but it's still pretty goofy. Like John Joseph sings like a cartoon wolf or like a Tasmanian devil on most of this. But I think he's also belting it out. You know, sometimes you hear stuff that's heavy and the vocalist is doing a technique or like open up YouTube and look for how to do death metal growls or how to do death metal squeals. And there'll be like a 12-year-old boy that's showing you how to like hold your breath and breathe through your nose to make a pig squeal. This guy's not doing that. You know, he's not doing any of that. He's just belting it out. And the gang vocals are pretty cool. Like, I grew into it. You know, this is a man expressing his urge to live in the lawless streets and survive, you know, authentically. I don't know his background. Was he actually like a street? Like you said, Harley was a crazy man, but they were all street dudes for real.
Yeah. There was a story from his book that I most famously embellish, I think. And people say I'm just making this up, but it was along these lines. It's like, dude, I mean, I probably wouldn't waste time reading his book if I were you, but I mean, if you get the audiobook version, it might be worth listening to a few hours for, because he's one of those guys who's like, oh man, I had to walk to school uphill both ways, but like times a million, man. Right. Like, he supposedly had such a rough life. He was in and out of foster homes all the time and adopted parents. And there's one of his adopted parents would like scrape the... They like scrape the Oreo filling off of the Oreos. Spit it onto like bread and make them eat like Oreo filling sandwiches for dinner and stuff. Like, it's just like all this ridiculous shit. Ugh. And it's a very one-sided book where you're just like, I wonder what the other guy's side of the story was, because it's a lot of like, no one's doing any wrong, or he's not doing any wrong in this. It's just like everybody else. So it's just like, even when they get into like, he finally, like after thousands of pages, gets into the Cro-Mag shit, it's just like, oh, so you were in the right the whole time. That's very strange. Very convenient for your book.
Okay, so this wasn't the super heavy wave of destruction I was expecting, right?
Yeah.
I do think it was done well. I think it's played well. Like, there's a lot of hardcore you can listen to from this era and even onward where they're not good at their guitars.
Yeah.
And they made it to the studio. Like, someone let them get all the way through the studio and they don't actually know how to play the song, and the song's not that hard to play. Cro-Mags aren't that. They're fine. Like, and the bass tone's pretty interesting. Like, I actually like the way this guy, like, I don't know his name. I like Harley's bass sounds. It sounds like, you know, his bass was too much for him. And if you ever watch that old Pop Will Eat Itself video where they're playing giant papier-mâché bass guitars, that's what this sounds like. So that's pretty cool. And there's some sizzle to it, you know. And it's actually kind of flawless for 1986. And, you know, it even ends with some stuff. Like, one of the last couple songs actually sounds like it could have been on Judge Bringing It Down. I don't know if it's the last song, but it's one of the last couple songs. It has the big intro where they're just hitting chords and the bassist is going bananas. Cool. Like that, just to me, that's just leading into the other thing that I was talking about. So it's like, I'm right. I just feel like I'm right all the time. but here's, maybe we can share this part. I don't get how you get into this now.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't know how you're under 45 and landing on this as your favorite hardcore album, unless it's the first one you ever heard. But you have like all of music history laid out under your fingertips right now. So if you're writing super hard for this album, we have different approaches to music. Yeah. This isn't bad. It's not even like, there's nothing shameful about this. I just don't get it. I don't get like how this is the thing that all my friends who are into like crazy, sick, heavy stuff are still like, oh, Mags, Age of Coral. How? How did you get to that? It's like there's so much four on the floor, fast punk kind of hardcore on this, and that shouldn't be a whole album for me. You need if I'm listening, there's the album Pink by Boris. Mm-hmm. Boris is a sludgy, you know, spacey, atmospheric, whatever, doomy metal band. They have one song on it called something like I Almost Forgot Myself or something like that, and it's just like a punk song. That's awesome. If you fill your album with weird shit and then do one really straightforward, heavy, fast song, that's going to be my favorite song. Like just one. Do one. If you do eight, it's got to be like 12 to 15% tops.
Would you have liked this when you were 16 though?
Yes, because I had a Slapshot tape when I was 16. Oh. And I'm not saying this sounds like Slapshot, but I made myself like Slapshot. And I think this is at least on par with Slapshot back on the map. So if I had a tape with this on the back of Slapshot, I probably would have found a way to know every lyric on this album and have a Cro-Mags tattoo by now.
Okay. What Scott said about the album was not as bad as I expected, but I will say the one problem with doing a podcast like this, where you just talk about people's favorite albums, probably, as they're, if you hate them, they're just going to assume you don't know shit about music because they're not going to agree with you. And that kind of sucks. But I'll say again, I think this is a fine record, but the way people digest music now is a lot different than how I came up, because they have the internet and they can listen to whatever they want now, like Scott said. So I it was like I got into tough guy hardcore when I was a younger boy. I mean, I think one of the first like bands I really, really related to was Biohazard. And so, you know, I heard Biohazard way before I even knew the Cro-Mags were a thing. I definitely heard Madball before I heard Cro-Mags. And so it was like one of those things where, you know, you'd always hear people saying, you know, you got to check out the Cro-Mags. It's like, I can't check them out because they're not a band. You know, they don't play fucking New Haven, Connecticut. So I can't go see them. And that's the thing I think people younger than us neglect to remember is that when I was growing up, like, I did not give a fuck about old music. Like you said last episode, like, no one cared, man. Like, no one cared what happened 5 years ago. The oldest thing I listened to was fucking MOD, USA for MOD, which is a problematic record if you're a woke warrior out there. But, and that record came out in 1984, and I thought it was, like, the oldest record on earth. And so I didn't, like, you know, so I didn't, like, know the Cro-Mags, blah, blah, blah. So by the time I heard them, I was like, I heard fucking Madball and Biohazard, and those bands were fucking heavy as hell, just like Scott said. And I heard this, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, why would anybody fucking like this? So I just never liked it. Over time, I can appreciate it now, like looking back now at it and say, oh yeah, that's really, for 1986, that's super good. And it's like, but it's not scary or tough or anything.
No.
And it's just like Scott said, I don't know how anybody, I'll accept it. Anybody my age or, you know, older than me, fine. If this is your favorite record, fine. I don't know what it is about it, but I'll go with it. But if you're like 27 now and you're really into this, I just don't know how you got to that point. Like there's so many scarier, harder bands out there. And maybe you're just more, I don't know. Maybe most of the kids who like this now are the same kind of like tough Mongo kids we grew up with. Maybe it's the more punk side now that likes this still, or, you know, the more like traditional hardcore side.
Right. Cause it is more like punky. This is a very unfortunately punky for me anyway.
Yeah. I mean, maybe kids now are at an advantage that they didn't grow up like going to see like Bulldoze and stuff like that, and seeing like, you know, the bands that weren't as famous as Bulldoze, who is of course a famous band that everybody knows, but you know, like the local version of Bulldoze in your town, like Blood War, like Scott grew up with a band. Well, I grew up. He was already older than him, probably. But there was a band called like Blood War that was like a Troycore band, but not one of the popular ones that are somehow influencing today's generation of music, which is fucking a whole other story. But
I love that.
Yeah. So maybe, since these kids didn't come up like going to those types of shows, Cro-Mags really is like a fucking, you know, a beast of a band to them. I don't know.
It's got to be at least partially the fact that this is an album that comes with an audiobook for you now and several YouTube channels.
Yeah, it's true.
And a podcast and a fitness regimen and a religion.
Yeah.
Like you really get a kit. If you decide you want to get a Cro-Mags, you got a fucking kit and you got all the coolest shirts.
Yeah.
It's a cool band name. It's legendary. So, you know, I guess you got nothing to lose if this is the thing that you're going for.
They didn't have to sit through, like, I don't even know if you remember. Remember they had that other band, like Both Worlds? Do you remember
that's
that?
What I was going to ask you. I remember that for a while, because, you know, Albany is a place where they really got into the band. There's a band, Stigmata, who's local. I'm not going to talk about that because I don't want to get beat up. They live around here. But it was never that exciting, but it was this really exciting, like they were metal and they were hardcore and they actually made it.
Yeah,
they made it. Yeah. They actually got out of, you know, for a while, they got out of Albany and became a big deal. And they fostered a scene around here of kind of, you know, the heavier stuff that was a little bit. There was stickers everywhere for whatever it is that I know it had Harley with his shirt off flexing his pecs.
Yeah.
And somebody else, maybe, I don't know if John Joseph was in the band or for someone else, but there's two men standing there flexing their modest pecs. Whatever, I'm fat, but like these guys were nothing. They weren't Arnold Schwarzenegger, and they're flexing their pecs on a sticker that was all over Albany. And I don't remember the name of the band, but it's probably the one you're talking about.
I think it is. There was Both Worlds. There was like Red Devil, I think, was another one or something. That might have been the one you're thinking of. I can't remember.
I don't know. It was definitely meant to be Krishna, whatever it was.
Both Worlds then. Yeah, all right. But yeah, I mean, yeah, like kids didn't have to sit through that. So maybe that's why the Cro-Mags seem like. Because, yeah, when I was coming up, the only way you really heard about the Cro-Mags was like, oh, they hate each other and blah, blah, blah. And there's always like legendary stories. And I'm just like, I don't fucking care, man. I'm a kid.
That is, you're exactly right. There's a period from, let's just throw a dart. We'll say from 1997 to 2002, where Earth Crisis was a new metal band and you didn't have to pay attention to that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they put out several albums of groove metal. And were in other bands. They started other bands that were also groove metal.
Yeah.
And you motherfuckers aren't talking about that. You're still talking about Firestorm. So could you find it in your heart to like it the way I kind of did though? Like, could you listen to it?
Oh no,
it? Like,
yeah. I'm fine with it now. Like, you know, I can listen to old punk and stuff and be like, oh yeah, this is pretty cool. Like, I get it. Cause you know, I'm a mature man. So I could like listen to it and be like, oh, I totally understand. But yeah, I mean, I've always liked the song Malfunction. That's one of the heavier songs on here. I think that's a pretty sick song. You know, all the other hits like Hard Times, Fine, even It's the Limit, like all those songs are Street Justice, which is kind of a silly song, but you know, it's good. But yeah, I mean, my only real beef with this record was just growing up and just still to this day not understanding why, you know, this is the hardest of the hardcore record because it's not even close, man. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's no Blood for Blood.
No, it's no Blood for Blood for sure.
It's no Marauder.
So I'll close this out. You've probably heard the story a million times if you know me in real life. But I went up to... I'm just going to spill all the beans. I'm going to make this real personal story.
Yeah.
Because it'll make it even funnier and spicier. I was living in New York. I was living in Brooklyn. And, you know, I used to live in Albany. So I'd go up there from time to time. And there was a time when I first moved to New York that I was out of a job for like a few months. So my money was limited. And I was like, oh, I want to go hang out with my friends in Albany. So Aaron and a bunch of other people were going up to see the John Joseph version of the Cro-Mags at the time called The Fearless Vampire Killers, which was just John Joseph singing Cro-Mags songs. And I think all the rest of the band were like either from Bad Brains or like other guys of Cro-Mags. Like it was just, you know, a whole set of scabs from these legendary hardcore bands.
Yeah.
And I asked Joe, our friend who was in a band called Born Low, if he can put me on the guest list. Because, you know, I was kind of strapped for cash. And he said, yeah, sure. And then I get to Albany. And I found out he gave my guest spot up to Scott Vogel from the band Terror. so he could check out Born Low. So Scott did not show up to the show, by the way. Scott Vogel did not make it.
Of course he didn't.
So anyways, I just want to go hang out with my friends. I had no interest in seeing this fucking band. First off, they have incense burning at their merch table. Not Born Low, but the Fearless Vampire Killers. And I'm like, okay, man. Okay. I remember when we used to practice, we had like a band that burned incense in the fucking practice room near us. And it's just like, we get it. You're spiritual. Like, whatever the fuck's
going on. You like Tool.
Yeah. I will say, before I get to the punchline of the story, they played, and I mean, if you wanted to hear these fucking Cro-Mag songs, they everything was perfect. I think a lot of these bands that have been doing the same songs since they were teens, they grow up to be very good at them because they've been playing for 40 years. I mean, it was fucking, like, if I really liked the Cro-Mags, my head would have exploded because they were fucking perfect, spot on, note for note. It was great. But before, right before they went on stage, I think I went out to go have a cigarette or something. Mm-hmm. And I saw John Joseph in the band van with the windows open. It was winter. It was fucking cold as hell. But I could hear it. And he was listening to his own audiobook in the van to get pumped up before playing the show.
Was he slapping himself?
I didn't get that close.